They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Hey there. Welcome back to Jones at the Movies. I'm distracted because I'm digging through my mail. Probably should have done that before we started recording. Nathan, happy VE Day. Today is the 80th anniversary of victory in Europe when the Nazi regime, just to use a little bit of technical historical jargon, were militarily de-pantsed by the Allies. So great job, everyone. Nathan, I've got a few things to talk about, and I'm going to try to be quick because I know you have some stuff that you want to talk about. First of all, I know that this is a movie podcast primarily, but I do feel the need to comment on Grand Theft Auto 6's delay and new trailer, because that is going to be the biggest entertainment launch in human history. You can put money on that.
Yeah.
I just think it's interesting. If you look at the release schedule of video games for when it was supposed to come out, I think it was like October or something of this year, that there's like a weeks-long exclusion zone around when GTA 6 was coming out, because that's the kind of cultural phenomenon that this video game is going to be. I know you're not all that interested in Grand Theft Auto, so I'm going to assume that you don't have that much to say about it.
Yeah, it looks like another Grand Theft Auto game. That's great. I saw an infographic that GTA 6 has now taken longer to develop and cost more to develop than the Burj Khalifa, which I think is crazy.
I did see that as well. Part of that is Rocksteady's desire to avoid crunch.
You mean Rockstar?
To avoid, what did I say?
Rocksteady. Who?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Rockstar. It's part of their desire to avoid crunch. So, frankly, I salute them for that.
Yeah, that is huge.
Next up, I've got two trailers that I want to talk about. The first one is for The Long Walk. Have you seen this trailer?
I didn't, but this was actually one of the things I was going to ask you about. Because I feel like way back when we did an episode of like movies we'd love to see, I feel like you mentioned The Long Walk as a Stephen King book that you wanted to see adapted. So I was just going to... I saw the trailer. I thought it looked decent. I'm fascinated to see how you make a bunch of people walking for a really long time interesting to like look at for a movie length. So I'm interested in that sense, but, you know, are you excited for this? Am I remembering correctly that you've been looking forward to an adaptation of this book?
I have no specific memory of saying that.
Dang.
Although it's possible that, right, I did, and I've just forgotten in my, right, like, that's the kind of question that people may have a different answer for on different days.
Sure.
But yes, I am excited for this. I like Stephen King, all right? I make fun of him whenever he does something stupid in one of his books, which is not infrequently. But at the end of the day, I like Stephen King. I think he's a good author, and I'm not ashamed to say that I have a healthy selection of his work on my bookshelf, including this book.
Wow.
And I thought Mark Hamill being the general... That's really interesting. I really like Mark Hamill, and I would be fascinated to see this kind of role from him.
Hmm.
Because obviously he's not a stranger to playing villains.
Yeah.
But this character is a lot less anarchic than the Joker. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the Hunger Games director. I watched those movies. I watched the first two movies when I was in middle school. I didn't like them then. I can't imagine that I would love them now, but I don't know. We will see.
Yeah.
The other trailer I wanted to talk about is Honey Don't.
Oh, gosh.
Which is...
I watched this trailer, too, actually.
Ethan Coen, now that he's on his own, has decided to make a trilogy of lesbian B-movies.
Oh, my God.
The first installment was Driveway Dolls, and that is a bad film. And I was open to the idea of... maybe this is going to be better. And maybe it will be. I don't know. But this trailer is decidedly lame. Especially when it comes to humor. I rolled my eyes at a few of these jokes. It just looks generic and way too exaggerated to be funny. And is Chris Evans a good actor? Because I'm kind of starting to wonder if maybe he's not.
It's so funny. I think he definitely has a poor ability to, like, choose scripts to work on. Because this man is... he's hungering for any good roles. Yeah. And I think I had Driveway Dolls as one of my least favorite movies from last year. And I stand behind that 100%. That movie is an amateurish, immature, stupid... there's no way for me to watch it and have an ounce of enjoyment or happiness for the entirety of its runtime. And this trailer looks like more of the same. So whatever psychopath is out there who love Driveaway Dolls, good news, because they're making the same flipping movie again with slightly different characters. But it looks so terrible. I can't. Unless Ethan Coen has some, like, deep desire to prove to everyone that Joel Coen is, like, a gajillion times more talented than him and, like, the progenitor of all the quality in every Coen Brothers movie, I don't understand why Ethan would continue this attempt. The lesbian B movies, that's not even a genre. They're trying to ape something that doesn't exist. And... yeah, I can't. It's ridiculous. I was kind of in your same shoes that I was like, oh, maybe Honey Don't will be better. And I don't even think I had to watch the full trailer to know I would hate this movie if I ever watched it. I just saw the, like, pre-trailer sizzle reel, and it had everything that I already needed to say this movie is not for me. And I don't know if it's for anyone, because I haven't seen anyone who... is excited for it.
Well, I agree. I might not be quite so strident in my appraisal, but Driveway Dolls is a very poor film. I don't know why Ethan thinks this is a good idea. It's hard for me to imagine, and it's pointless to speculate, really, on who... has the most talent in the partnership between Joel and Ethan, because obviously that's a very personal thing. Like, there's no way to know.
Yeah.
So yeah. Last but not least, there are rumors that A24 is producing an Alex Garland directed movie of Elden Ring from the Elden Ring universe.
Yeah.
Again, this is a rumor, so who knows? I would be open to that. I have problems with Elden Ring as a game. Elden Ring as a universe is an interesting one to make a movie out of when you compare it to the worlds of, like, Dark Souls, Bloodborne, and stuff. But... I have very fond memories of Elden Ring. For all my problems with it as a game, it came out on a day when I was home alone. Like, Mom and Dad and Ryan left for a week-long debate tournament. So for that entire week, it was pretty much just me walking Shadow, doing school, and playing Elden Ring.
Nice.
And it was a good time. And I think that what I'm saying is that I would not be immune to the charms of, like, seeing Limgrave or Radahn or these characters and places. I think I would have some kind of fond reaction to that if I saw them on the screen. And I think that Alex Garland, I haven't loved everything he's ever made, but he's a very visual director. And I think that there's potential there.
I think they should cast Jack Black as Patches. That's what I think.
I think that's a bad idea.
No, I think that's kind of a poor idea. I agree with you. Elden Ring is a mildly interesting fantasy world, and it does kind of have some of the same vibes as Annihilation and the world that the characters enter in that movie. Just in terms of it's a little surreal fantasy in places, as well as there's some like gross monsters and stuff. But yeah, I'm kind of an Alex Garland hater. I did not like Annihilation. I'm not over the moon about Ex Machina. Civil War is really bad, and you would have to pay me to watch Men, because that movie looks stupid as well. So him directing an Elden Ring movie for A24, of all people. How'd they get the license for this? That's ridiculous.
Well, again, this is all
speculation.
Rumors.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know. It sounds mildly interesting, depending on how they choose to do the story. But it's not. I'm not getting excited for it.
Well, I think I might get excited for it when and if it gets confirmed.
Sure.
And like, we start seeing production stills and trailers and stuff and get a better sense of what it would look like. Again, if it exists, which it might not. The thing about A24, apparently, this is what I've heard, is that A24 has acquired an appetite for, especially after Warfare, for mainstream. They want to break into the mainstream because right now they're kind of seen as a niche interest, and they want to diversify, I guess, or expand their portfolio and start making blockbusters of the kind that make lots of money and adapt popular video games.
Yeah. I think a couple years ago there was a report that A24 was looking for more blockbuster sort of action, and that Civil War was kind of their first step in that direction. Yeah,
strong first.
Yeah, really good opener, fellas. But yeah, I guess that makes some sense. If you're a production company, you want to make movie, you want to make money.
You
want to
make
is.
Movie.
You want to make money, and making a blockbuster is one of the quickest ways to make money if that blockbuster is, like, good. And making a blockbuster out of an established IP, like the second best-selling video game of 2022, I think that's a pretty good way to get some assured cash. So, but again, this is all feeling similar to Miyamoto talking about the Super Mario Bros. Movie, that it doesn't seem as though the driving motivation is a desire to make a really meaningful artistic statement on the human condition. It seems as though the motivation is to make money. So, but hey, some movies I really enjoyed had the primary motivation of we're making this thing to make money. The Lego movie, I love the Lego movie. Undoubtedly, the inception of that movie was a Lego executive saying, hey, we could make a ton of money if we made a movie. And then they made a really good one. So, you know, maybe it'll end up being good.
Well, we will see. That's all I got.
Well, yeah, you covered the things I was going to talk about, too. That's so funny. Because I was also going to ask you if you saw how terrible the new Ethan Coen movie looked. Anyway, Elliot, you chose this movie, and it's kind of an interesting one because it's one that neither of us had seen, but it's not a new one. So, you know, what was the movie you chose? Why do you choose it? And let's get this review started here.
So today we're talking about The Thing 2011, not The Thing 1982. This is a prequel to The Thing 1982. I don't know why they gave it the same name. I guess it would be kind of, it would feel a little bit hokey to call it like The Thing Origins or something like that.
Yeah, apparently in the IMDb trivia, it said that they couldn't think of a subtitle that they liked. So they tried out like The Thing Begins and stuff like that, and they thought they all sounded stupid, so they just kept it as The Thing.
Well, fair enough. But yeah, so this is a prequel to the John Carpenter classic. A direct prequel. So think Rogue One in terms of leading right into the events of the movie that it precedes chronologically. So if you know the setup for The Thing, the original Thing, then you know the setup for this movie. A group of scientists in Antarctica stumble on a crashed alien ship and an alien. This alien is hostile in the extreme, and it has an ability, it's not an ability, it's like a biological trait that it absorbs and imitates any and all life. So this movie is about the Norwegian scientists finding it and then dying one by one as they are assimilated by the thing, and it leads up to it almost leads up to the very first shot of The Thing 1982 when they're on the helicopter shooting at the dog.
Yeah.
So that's the setup. This movie did not do well financially or critically, which I only learned today when I was doing research. Honestly, the reason I chose this movie is because we here at Magellan's at the Movies really like The Thing. It is on our best of the 80s list.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to see what a more modern version of it looked like. And I wanted to get back into that world, and I wanted to drag you along with me.
Well, thank you.
Nathan, let's get right into it. First thoughts. What do you think?
Yeah, I think in general, this is just like a toothless version of The Thing from the 80s. That this has, there's nothing in this movie that it does better than the original film. And there's a fair number of things that this movie does marginally worse or significantly worse than the original film. And, you know, every time they make a remake, and even though this movie is a prequel, it is ostensibly a remake. Like, plot-wise, it is basically a remake. It's the same premise. It's the same things happening. They even suggest doing a, like, blood test thing, and then they find a different way to have the same scene, but way worse from the original. And I think every time you make a remake, there's kind of a question of, right, what fresh thing can we do? How can we change the story to make it more interesting or make a character more compelling? And with this movie, they said, what if we replaced great-looking, super-cool practical effects with terrible Resident Evil flippin' CGI? Every time the monsters did anything, I thought Mila... I can't pronounce her last name. Mila Djokovic or whatever her name is.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, the woman from the Resident... I thought she was going to come out and, you know, in a trench coat and two submachine guns to shoot it, because they looked like Resident Evil villains. So yeah, I feel like that's my major thoughts on the movie is it's just like a mediocre rehashing of a horror classic.
Well, I agree. I thought I like to try to summarize things, and after the movie was done, I said to our father, because I talked to him that night, and I said that everything that it tries to do, that it tries to imitate from the original thing, it does worse, and everything new that it tries to do, it does poorly.
Yeah.
I felt like the characters were less interesting. I did not appreciate the inclusion of a pseudo secondary antagonist, human antagonist. Like you said, this movie, and apparently this is one of the most infamous parts of the movie, is its special effects, which are terrible. And also, apparently, this is stuff I learned from my research, it originally had practical effects, but in a series of studio-mandated reshoots,
amazing,
the filmmakers were forced to shift to CGI.
Amazing.
So, thanks a lot, Universal.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that just in general, the thing itself, I don't know why it is, but it is just so much less intimidating and interesting and thought-provoking or thoughtful than it was in the original. And I think definitely part of that is because it is now, right, just a very shiny, plasticky-looking, fake CGI. And part of it is also that the thing itself is just a little bit dumber.
Yeah.
Like, which I would say is true of the movie as a whole. Like, there are moments where it feels like the movie is trying to be a lot more action-y and a lot more spectacle-heavy than the original. Like, there's chase scenes in this movie, and they go to the alien ship. That was really weird.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, did you know that was going to be the climax? Because when they walked onto the ship and it was, like, starting up, I was like, wow, this is an aggressive... This is not what I predicted.
I did know that was going to happen.
Oh, okay.
Just because I had heard about it. But yeah, I think that that is indicative of the movie's more... I mean, it sounds harsh, but just dumber sensibilities. Like, gone is the slowly building, carefully crafted tension of the 1982 thing. Here we have a much heavier emphasis on the flamethrowers and the explosions and just stuff breaking and happening and moving. And that's all much more blockbustery, but it's also much more stupidy, in my opinion. Not great.
Well, I think it kind of begins with, you know, to start our review kind of, I think it starts with the characters. Firstly, there's way too many characters, and the movie doesn't leverage this into making the plot more tense, because you would think with more characters and therefore more people who could possibly be the thing, the movie would be higher stress. But instead, it just becomes an exercise in the writers figuring out ways for the characters to stupidly send two people to do jobs so that one of them can turn out to be the thing and kill the other one. Like, the movie doesn't leverage these more characters, and most of the characters just turn into meaningless side characters, whereas in the original The Thing, each of the characters had, because there was so few of them, you were always aware of the people who could be the thing, right, who had been off screen for a while or who, right, had gone and done something, as well as you got a sense of the type of people they were. If you think of Kurt Russell's character, were shown really early on his attributes, that he's kind of a, you know, get it done by any means necessary sort of person. And then we see that play out in the way that he deals with the possibilities of the thing. Whereas in this movie, we don't get a really good sense of any of the characters besides, oh shoot, what's the name of the, like, head scientist guy? The one who is like a sociopath?
Is it Edvard?
Give me a second. No, it's not. Sander. 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 Sander Halvorsen.
Okay.
Sander is the only character that I feel like we get a really good sense of who they are as a person. And even this is like a really generic, like unemotional scientist sort of person who's just like throwing a wrench in the works. And seemingly, a lot of the times, seemingly just to like be a problem. He's never like help. His suggestions are never like, oh, that's a helpful thing, even if that's a little aggressive. His suggestions are always like, that's insane, bro. Don't do that. Like, that's a really good way for everyone to get killed. And then the other character, I mean, you know, there's other characters in this, like Mary Elizabeth Winstead's character, who is just kind of there to be like the protagonist, but has no defining features outside of that characteristic. We have the guy from CSI something as someone who knows Mary Elizabeth Winstead's character. Katie, I believe, is her name. But he's just kind of there, and Joel Edgerton is also in the movie, and there's other people. That one guy from Game of Thrones is in this movie as one of the Norwegian scientists. But again, like, none of them have defined relationships with each other, so it's hard to care when people start to die, and none of them have defined characteristics that make it interesting to see them play off of each other as they're thrown into this high stress situation. I mean, compare this to Sinners, right? Where the first hour and a half of the movie does such a great job of establishing the type of people who are about to be stuck in this difficult situation. In The Thing, we don't get any of that.
Well, I agree wholeheartedly. I think you've hit the nail on the head there. They're, to the extent that any of them are characterized, which is not all of them, their characterizations are very flat and very uninteresting. Like, Sander is that pseudo secondary antagonist who I was talking about. I do not need him here doing this. Like, in the original Thing, there were the human characters, a lot of them became foils for each other, but they were never acting antagonistically in the way that Sander does, where, like you said, he's just acting in a very counterintuitive way that made me dislike him, not in the way that I dislike villains like, I don't know, Voldemort or something, right? Like, characters that you love to hate. More like in the way, like, this character is annoying and I want him off my screen, please.
Yeah.
And in general, the group is very generic. Which, again, turning back to the original Thing, none of the characters were particularly deep or complex, but they all had very well-defined characteristics that contributed to the conflict that arose in the group, that you had people who were a little bit more nervous, people who were a little bit more assertive, people who were a little bit more combative. I struggle to assign even those basic attributes to any of these characters. Like, they're all just kind of there.
Yeah.
There's some great actors in here, like Mary Elizabeth Winstead and Joel Edgerton, but Kate is a nothing burger of a character, and Joel Edgerton is here to be the MacReady stand-in, right? Kurt Russell's character.
Yeah,
from the original. But his hair isn't nearly good enough to be MacReady.
Yeah, lame hair, worse jacket. Yeah,
yes, absolutely. So, that's one of the crucial things I think that's missing from this movie that turns it into so much more of a generic horror movie, because you've got a bunch of generic meatbags who are just there to be killed and to turn into weird looking thingies. I did like how the one CSI or NCIS or whatever guy got turned into that original, yeah, that it, that burned corpse that they find at the beginning of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
That was fine. But I do want to talk about the thing itself, because yeah, this is one of my most, this is one of the things, the areas where the movie disappointed me the most. And I'm not that precious about practical effects versus computer generated effects. Like I prefer practical effects, but I'm not one of those people who thinks that the presence of CGI has been a net detriment to movies. I think it's been neutral, if anything. No, my problem with the thing is that it seems dumber in this movie. Like, I went back and I rewatched part of the original thing, and in that movie, the thing never reveals itself unless it's discovered or it has an opportunity to assimilate someone, right? Like, the thing is very subtle. And that's one of the things that in our review, we actually talked about how effective that is at making the thing so frightening, is because it has that intelligence to it. Like, it doesn't seem like an animal. It seems like it has some level of strategy to it. But here, the thing attacks at random. Like, there's this part where a group of them are leaving on a helicopter, and one of the people in the helicopter is a thing, and it just attacks them for no reason. Yeah. In fact, it causes the helicopter to crash, which, why? Why is it doing that? And then again, there's a part where they're in the middle of, like, a confrontation with the Americans, and they're carrying this guy into another room, this guy who's had, like, a bit of a shock or something, and his arm, like, detaches and becomes a thing, and it's revealed he's a thing, but, like, why is the thing choosing that moment to reveal itself when it is clearly at a disadvantage?
Yeah. Well, and it seems as though the movie, and this is right, one of those instances where, because you can do something, maybe the writers or the creators of the movie don't think long enough about whether or not they should, that because the thing can do, yeah, you know, Jurassic Park reference, so funny. But because they can CGI the thing, and therefore the thing can do a lot more, right? Like, a puppet is kind of limited in terms of what you can do with a puppet. I mean, that's why, famously, the shark in Jaws rarely shows up in Jaws, because the puppet didn't work, and so they had to kind of shoot around it. But losing that limitation, the movie seems to be content to getting the things to turn into giant, again, Resident Evil monsters as soon as possible, so then they can have, like, lame fights with them. I mean, when... Yeah, that was a great... The scene in the helicopter where the thing is revealed, there was no advantage to be doing it then. And then even a little later in the movie, Kate gets taken into a back room with this one woman, and I was like, oh, obviously this woman is a thing and she's gonna attack her. But, like, it does it so poorly that Kate gets away, and then there's, like, a lame fight scene. And even at the end of the movie, when they have the big... thing, it doesn't even change back into a human. It stays in, like, monster form, and I don't know, you know, I'm not well versed enough to know whether or not the thing can turn back into a human after it's kind of turned into a monster. But the movie does a whole, like, xenomorph section where Carter is hiding in the kitchen from the thing, and I'm like, dude, why are we this is not what makes the thing scary. Like, it is not it's scary because it could be anyone. It's not scary because it's a big monster. If I wanted to see a big monster, right, I'd watch a different movie. I'd watch Alien, or I'd watch, you know, something else. And so, yeah, there's just a lot of moments where the thing reveals itself earlier than it would have in the original, or at least earlier than it does in the original. And then it just leads to a not particularly exciting fight scene.
Yeah. Like, when it reveals itself, it is in service of these, like I said, much more action-y kind of set pieces. Like, when Kate and the Thing Woman are in that back room, it leads to the Thing, like, chasing her around like Ghostface.
Yeah.
And I think that that's just... Like, obviously, I don't want to be too... I don't want to go too hard into the, it's not like the original, the Thing, so it's bad. Because obviously, right, chasing people around can be very effective in horror movies.
Yeah.
I think that this is an example of this movie doing something different from the original, but just doing it poorly. Like, this chase scene is not all that interesting. It feels very generic. And all of the scene after that arm gets detached, the Thing just kind of lies in the room for a little bit, and it's got this appendage that's whipping around, and it's smashing stuff and breaking tables and light bulbs and stuff. And yeah, it's just not all that interesting. And so you've lost that claustrophobic, ever-present tension from the original, and you've replaced it with stuff that you can get in your average horror flick that features your average monster running around chasing people and breaking stuff. And it's just so much less interesting and compelling than that slow burning suspense and the anticipation. It's just not there. And like I said, that's fine. You want to do something new? I support that, if anything. But what it does new is lame.
Well, and it's not even doing something new, right? Like,
well, yeah,
It's doing something different from the original, but what it's doing is, like, the same thing that lame horror movies have done for the last four decades, right? It's doing lame monsters being fought in unexciting action scenes by bland characters. It's not doing something novel that we think is bad. It's doing something generic instead of doing, you know, maybe it would be better if it just shamelessly ripped off the Thing. At least then it would be, you know, doing something good, in my opinion.
Yeah, I did kind of think when they were talking about, oh, let's set up a blood test, I was like, are we really gonna do just the blood scene from the original? And they didn't, which I think is the right choice. I don't think I would have enjoyed them just rehashing that scene. And honestly, I didn't hate the workaround that they came up with, that the Thing can't recreate inorganic material, so they're looking for, like, metal parts, specifically fillings. And I thought, well, that's not a bad idea. And I was interested to see how they would resolve the fact that they are left with people who have no fillings, but could very well be just good at dental hygiene. That created a conflict that I was interested to see resolved, but it doesn't get resolved because what actually happens is the Americans break out and they take control of the situation, and then the Thing's arm detaches and it attacks because I guess it's bored.
Yeah.
So yeah, there was potential there, and then they squandered it.
Well, and there's...
Go ahead.
I mean, there's some other scenes, too, that I think are very effective. I liked... I did find it a smidge unbelievable when Katie found the bloody shower and the metal fillings on the floor of the bathroom. I found it unbelievable that no one had, like, been in there before then. But it was at least... It was an effective scene in terms of building tension, but this is another place where the movie right kneecaps itself, because she doesn't right away go and tell people, like, hey, go check out the bathroom. It looks like something died in there. And I don't even understand. Why did she only show Adam the cells of the thing copying stuff? Why did she not get everyone and be like, hey, look at this. Isn't this crazy? It seems as though she just shows Adam and then she goes to bed. Like, wow, that's insane, bro. Like, she doesn't even tell... I've already forgotten his name again. But the chief doctor who's, like, clearly been very interested in what is happening with this thing.
Yeah. I didn't even think about that, but that's a good point. I did think that when... she's trying to convince everyone that that what's happening is happening. She doesn't show them the fillings until like 5 minutes into the scene, and I thought that's such a movie way of doing things.
Yeah.
Right? That you have this the strongest piece of evidence that you have immediately available to you are these bloody fillings, and you decide to bury the lead so that you can set them on the table and do the dramatic, like, ooh, look at this, bloody fillings, wow.
Yeah.
I did wonder what happened that the shower was all bloody. Like, was someone taking a shower and got thingified? Or did the thing go to the shower? Like, was it really self-conscious and it was like, oh, I don't want people to see me doing this. I'm going to go to the shower and get a little privacy.
I would assume that someone got thingified in the shower and that's what caused it. But I don't know.
That makes sense. I do want to talk about the finale. is on the alien spaceship.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I thought that the Sander is his name. The Sander thing looked really funny when he still had the human face.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard to describe. You should just look up an image of it, because he just looks kind of stupid. And I don't know why he's maintained his human face, because it immediately splits open into something a lot more weird. I thought that that's... Like, again, I'm not opposed to the idea of being on the ship, and if anything, I think that is an example of, okay, we have more we have better technology, we have a higher budget, so what can we do with that? I think that going onto the ship could have been an example of, like, oh, this is something that we could add on to the things, like, I don't know, it's I don't know. This is something we could do that's new.
Yeah.
And obviously I would not at all want to know anything about the thing. I wouldn't want to know where it came from, whether it was an original passenger on the ship, or whether it was the reason that it crashed and it's a parasite. I wouldn't want to know any of that. And we don't know. We don't learn any of that, to be fair. But what we do is... What we do have is just the exact same kind of weird, lame action scene, but just on a new set.
Yeah.
Which is very disappointing. Like, I wanted things in the alien ship to be, like, weird. Like, just completely insane geometry, a layout that doesn't make any sense. Something alien, right?
Yeah.
But it's kind of just, like, a big open space... that so that they can have this little chase scene. So I feel like this is yet another example of the movie wants to do something new, which I salute you, movie, for wanting to do that. But what it does new, like you said, what it does isn't new, it's just different from the original one, and it doesn't do enough with it to make me care.
Yeah, well, and then it doesn't even end... Like, after it does the alien sequence, there's a reveal that Carter is an alien. But even that is, like, such a non-event, because Katie just kills him right away. Like, there's no... The Thing has an iconic ending that's still being discussed to this day of, like, just an amazing moment and leaving you with a continuing sense of tension and unease. And then this thing, this movie just, and right, it can't really have a great twist ending because we know how it ends, right? We've seen everything that happens in the original movie. But even then, it felt like such a lame, half-hearted final gasp that I was like, why even bother having that, leaving this in here? Then it reveals, and then it doesn't even show. I don't know. It was just a weak ending in my mind. And it didn't, apparently they cut the scene where Colin kills himself. And that was like one of the few things that I vividly remembered from the original and was like waiting to happen, that I was like, oh, eventually someone gets so stressed that they, you know, kill themselves in this thing. They don't even show it in the movie. But they take time to have someone put an axe in the wall. I feel like our priorities are, I don't know. It just, the whole ending just seemed really poorly done, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, part of it is because we don't really care about Carter. Like, I think Joel Edgerton is a great actor, and it's not like he turns in a bad performance here, but who cares about Carter? I don't. And also, I think it's another example of the Thing's different strategizing in this movie, that when he finds Kate and she's fighting a thing, so they're both things at that point. That is it. That is the perfect time to thing up, right?
Yeah.
And help out your buddy. So it feels very forced, the reveal that he's actually a thing, because if he was, well, obviously he was, but he should have at that point tapped in,
done,
right?
Yeah.
Because like you have victory in your grasp right there. Like, you just take care of this woman and then you have control of the ship and you can do whatever your thing heart desires. But he doesn't. At least he doesn't attack the thing. Because I did think, because again, I knew that this was going to happen. I did think when he went in there, I was like, okay, if he attacks this thing, that's really weird. But he doesn't. He just kind of stares at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I do think that the way this movie stitches itself to the opening of the original Thing is just kind of sloppy. Like, Lars, he's the guy who disappears at one point. Like, we see a shot of him going through a doorway, and then he kind of, like, jerks to the side and he vanishes. So, like, what happened there? Because we know from the original Thing that he is a human. So he just, I don't know, gets body checked or something, and then he decides he's done, and he holds up somewhere until someone comes back in a helicopter, and he's like, oh, what are you? And then they see the dog running away, and he's like, let's get after it and shoot it. Even though at this point I should probably know that shooting it does nothing, and you're supposed to use fire.
Yeah, well, and the dog running away is another instance of the Thing being stupider than it should be, because, like, if you've been holed up as a dog this whole time, why did you wait for, like, the worst possible moment to flee? Why did it not run away when Lars hiding in a bunker was the only person left at the base?
I think it
feels like they should have spent some more time working on the story, because if they're going to connect it this directly, I feel like there's better ways to explain some of the stuff that they have.
Oh, absolutely. I think that it could have been done way better. And Hollywood, if you're out there listening, hit me up. I have ideas.
No, don't hit him up. We don't need a remake of a terrible prequel. Okay, that's true.
That's true. Don't hit me up about my other ideas.
I don't have a ton of closing thoughts. I did want to say that I noticed early in the movie that the cold breath, the like fog breath, was CGI, which is just a terrible idea. It looks terrible. Like I noticed it as soon as people started breathing, that I was like, that's not what cold breath looks like, and that's not how it behaves, and it certainly doesn't behave like, yeah, it just, it looked terrible. It was stupid. They shouldn't have done it. Yeah, I the music is okay, I would say. It's like all right music. The movie, in terms of technical aspects, the CGI is not great. It's not like the worst CGI I've ever seen. It's not like Mortal Kombat 2 CGI or something. It's better than that, but it is, like, this movie came out almost a decade after Revenge of the Sith, and the thing looks a bajillion times worse than, like, General Grievous and every droid in that movie. So it's not like this movie came out in a time when no CGI was good. There was a lot of great CGI up to this point.
Well, again, to be fair, this is a studio-mandated reshoot test screenings were interpreted as being negative. So, I mean, that was just a dumb idea. And probably was done in a pretty decent hurry.
Yeah, well, I can't imagine the movie would be that much better if they hadn't done that.
I agree.
Anyway, I think I'm ready to get to my rating here.
Yeah, I'll just add that I agree about everything you said. The music is music. the movie looks fine. Like, the cinematography is fine, whatever.
Yeah.
It's not like this movie's unwatchable or anything. It's just most of its problems really are down to character and plot and kind of like world building, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's append a rating to it.
Yeah, I agree with what you said there at the end. I mean, I'm giving it like a 3.4 out of 10. It's not like an affront to art. It's just an aggressively generic, I mean, kind of similar to the Mario movie. It's got a lower score than the Mario movie because I do think there's stuff in here that's like objectively or very aggressively subjectively to me bad. Like, the CGI is bad. The characters are bad. And yeah, it's just, it in almost every case, it, instead of doing something novel and interesting in comparison to the original, it does something more generic and stupider than what the original did. So there's just not a good reason to ever watch this, in my opinion. So yeah, that's my score.
Yep. I agree. Stick to the original. I'm going to give this movie a D.
Nice. Well, now that we have that, let's talk about what would you recommend for this movie? And I can go first, Elliot. I'm going to recommend Possession, which is another 80s practical horror, kind of horror, I guess. It's more of a thriller than a horror movie in a lot of ways, but it follows a secret agent who returns home to West Berlin, it would be, and basically discovers that his wife has been cheating on him and that their marriage is kind of falling apart. As he attempts to use some of his skills to learn more about the person his wife has been seeing and the nature of the thing that she's wrapped herself up in, it becomes increasingly clear that there's other stuff going on. I don't want to spoil all of it because the movie is kind of crazy and the directions it goes is neat. It's maybe more of an artsier movie. I think it's definitely a movie that by the time it ends, you're left with more questions than answers, and you kind of have to resort to metaphors or interpretations of things in order to come to a conclusion about what it is you just saw. But I think the movie does a really great job of making those metaphors and those conclusions very easy and obvious. Like, I think even just the visual of being in a city split apart as their marriage is splitting apart is, like, already a really obvious metaphor, thematic sort of thing that I think is really cool. And then, yeah, the movie is just, it's a deeply disturbing sort of film in terms of the directions that it goes in. So I think if you liked the original The Thing, I think Possession is a really good movie to go off of with that. And, I guess I'm recommending another movie for the original The Thing. You can also watch it if you liked this movie, I guess. It's not very similar to it, but... yeah, that's my recommendation.
All right. I have not seen that movie. I know about it. I've actually avoided watching it because it sounds... I don't know. I don't like being disturbed.
It's, yeah, it's... There's a couple moments in it that I'm like, wow, that's really... something. It's a good movie. I like it, but yeah
I'm fine with being scared and tense and creeped out. I'm not sure about disturbed, but I don't know, maybe one day. It's got Sam Neill in it, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. Sam Neill plays the
love
husband.
Sam Neill, he's a good man. He should have been Pope. That doesn't make any sense. My recommendation is going to be The Lighthouse. This is a movie by
Eggers.
Robert Eggers, yeah, just had a total brain fart there. And it's basically, or it's not, I was going to say it's what I wanted The Thing prequel to be. That's not true. I didn't want The Thing prequel to be set on The Lighthouse. But it's the way that it's constructed is what I wanted The Thing prequel to be, because it's focused on that claustrophobic, steadily rising tension, as well as this unknown and unknowable threat that's closing in at all times. If you didn't know, this is about two men, lighthouse keepers, as it were, who are stranded on the island with their lighthouse during a storm, and it depicts their descent, their chaotic relationship as they kind of go insane and possibly are cursed by the sea or something. Very much like what you were describing with Possession, it relies a lot on unanswered questions, on a heavy atmosphere of dread. I wouldn't call this movie disturbing. Well, I don't know. There's a scene with a mermaid that's kind of weird. although for different reasons. I think that if you wanted that sense of tension, the sense of inescapability, and the sense of the unknown, right? The cosmic horror elements, I think that you'll be very well served by The Lighthouse. Very stylized movie, so that's that might put off some people, but then again, The Thing is pretty stylized as well, so...
Yeah, I don't know if I can second that recommendation. There was a couple of times where the way you described the movie is not necessarily how I would have described the movie. So, I don't know. Some people watch it and really like that movie. I watched it, and I was less than enamored with it, let's say that.
Well, it was just one of those disappointments, of which life has many in its unending hardness.
So true, so true. You're really finding new ways to throw that in there. That's great.
Thanks.
Anyway, thank you so much for listening to this episode. Send us an email. Do you love The Thing 2011? Are you baffled by why we keep choosing weird movies you've never seen instead of movies you have seen?
Hey! If you were one of those people, one of those focus testers who saw what this movie was before the reshoots, tell us about it. What was it like?
Was it good? Was it better? We would love to know. So send us an email. You can find the email link in the description of the episode or in the description of the podcast. We're going to be back next week with another brand new review. It's going to be super fun, super excited for it. So look forward to that, and we hope you have a great week.